This panel is called Face Out, Maximizing the Visibility of Emerging Writers. It is sponsored by CLMP, the Community of Literary Magazines and Presses. My name is Natalie Messnard, and I just joined CLMP in January as the Director of Programs and Strategic Communications at CLMP. So I'm really excited to be working with this organization. And part of why I'm so excited to be there is because I get to help out with Face Out, this amazing re-granting program we have to provide funds to small publishers and authors to help them heighten their marketing efforts. So Face Out is about helping these presses and writers make the work of these wonderful writers more visible and do some of the sort of marketing things that can happen when you have funds to do them. And so this is an awesome panel because we get to hear the writers' work and then talk with the writer-author pairs who have been a part of this iteration of the Face Out grant program about what they've been doing to work together as publishers and writers to market the books, or in one case a chapbook, which is also totally a book. In fact, we actually have a lot of chapbooks and zines are a part of CLMP's membership, and really excited to bring resources and the spotlight to chapbooks as well as full-length collections and all kinds of different publishing projects. So I'm going to introduce our panelists, and we'll just briefly learn their projects and names, and then we'll get to hear briefly from our three writers before we get into a discussion, not a presentation. The discussion is dynamic and among everyone up here, as well as anyone out there who wants to talk about this. So we'll have question and answer, and there's no PowerPoint planned, just a conversation among the folks who are in this room. So let's just go down the line over here. If you would just, we'll start here and go on this direction. If you would just say your name and then a couple sentence in one breath, I believe is the convention, one or two, what you do.
Sure, my name is Stephen Maitika. I'm a publisher of Mango Books, and we are a small press based in New York and Oakland. And we publish 14 books a year, poetry and prose and translation, some anthology and reprints. And I'm delighted to be working with Eli Shipley, whose forthcoming book is tentatively entitled Playing Dead, and will be out actually in January of 2018, so we're still in the ramp-up phase of outreach, marketing, planning, and so it's exciting to have the long view, to be able to talk about the long view.
Hi, and I'm Eli Shipley, and I think Stephen already kind of introduced me. In addition to writing poems, I also teach through CUNY at Brooklyn College.
I'm Sarah McCary. I'm the editor and publisher of Guillotine, which is a chapbook press that I publish mostly nonfiction essays and some sort of poetry nonfiction hybrids and short fiction. And I'm really excited to be here with Lyric Hunter, whose chapbook Motherboard just came out yesterday when I put them all together on the train. And if you are interested,
and we're really excited to be part of the Face Out group. My name is Lyric Hunter, and I'm a poet from New York City, and I'm really excited to have a book with Sarah McCary teaching.
I'm Alan Felsenthal. I edit and publish The Song Cave, a small press that focuses mainly on poetry, but also art writing, translation, an essay, and we make chapbooks and books, and the book that we're going to make in the fall, one of the books that we're going to make in the fall, is Emily Skillings' first book entitled For It Not. So we'll talk a little bit about that.
Hi, my name is Emily Skillings, and I'm a poet living in New York. I'm an MFA candidate at Columbia, where I teach this semester, and I love Song Cave, and I'm so excited that I have this book that I've been working on for a long time that's going to be coming out as a children's book.
you just say that this isn't, we should just say so people know it's a network program?
Yep.
We were going to say that, but...
Thank you.
Yeah. Because it's the funder, it supports publishers and poets in the five boroughs of New York City. So it's not... that's why it's so specific.
Thank you for that, Stephen. I was just about to remark myself that it's not a coincidence and it's not a bias. Indeed, the majority of the funds for this program come from a New York-specific foundation. So, you know, of course, CLMP is a national organization, but because we have funds in New York, the publishers and writers in this particular program tend to be there. So that's why everyone is saying, I'm from New York. So anyway, let's hear really briefly some work. Like, would love to hear you guys read some of the words that are being published in these projects. And let's go down from this side. So would you start, Emily?
This is the only poem that I've written since Trump won the election. And it's called Bay. And I'm going to try to sneak it into the manuscript, so I'm just going to read it to see if Alan likes it. Bay. I feel immenseness, and it grows in color and size until I can no longer sit obediently at my tulip table in my boiled shirt and my bursting polish, counting my blanks and fuse, until I leap up in 8,000 uncalculated motions, one more jagged than the next, like a fistful of weapons aimed at getting nothing done, in a subject clouding over, and come to a momentary sill. I feel a nisness, and something is ready towards the core of it to be drawn out and placed into vials in a network of paper strips, marked with fine-tipped instruments and presented before a court that is tasked with determining the weight we beat upon each other and the burden on the air and the small creatures that must be copper ounce by ounce lifted by the uptick of our sternums mid-hall, the troubling vapors filling our repository, ordinary sound embalms us inside. I feel in thisness. But what to do with the exchange of funds required to numb our erosion, the late night fidget of numbers hemorrhaging into a surrounding white. I went into the woods with some friends. We built a fire with nutritional pamphlets. I came out a movement of bright spots pressed to a retreating shadow. The light on the little bush at the edge of the property made it look or seem to shake, witnessing the feelings of others in the heat's color. A jealousy developed bluely, toxic little center. I feel a nisness. I never arrive, and nobody tells me a thing. As if I could be more arc than stamp, a platter with scented branches, smudged at the tip of thought, the creaking dock from which the boats of me sail off. Fine folk, friends, ghosts, I ask for delicate activation. I need it to live and breathe, to go on, to leave. How do you know, I have no more room to lay down in this life. This light on my hand becomes my hand. Thank you.
Go ahead, yeah, I'll have lyric next.
The light glances yellow and green against my window. Full leaves reflect full lip scent amorous harmonies. Growing stronger with wine and a bare heart for the first time is seen and shown light and given tender water like new growth of the dirt of the flower box. A plant is safe in the summer where I am searching for a flock of swallows and starlings shake leaves loose with their noise. In the moving light of the year, I have a place, a stable self. It is good to love. It is the simple matter of the warmth and weight of a hand on a shoulder, or arm, or thigh, or cheek, or knee, or hand. For some there is electricity, and for me there is an evenness, and I am balanced out, I am kissed, I kiss. I am not alone, I am a woman. I want touch, I want text, I want tenderness, I want communion, I want heart, I want theory, I want ethics. I want to abolish, but I want to build. I want to feel witnessed,
I want to witness. I want to exchange. I want to be generous. I want to participate. I want to withdraw. I want to appear. I want to be enough. I want to be surrounded by women. I want to be a garden. I want to know the sky. The exchange of saying and listening is a new old text, a theory and a practice in one. And the water bearer, this time, my twin. I want to say myself to the other. I want to listen. I want to give. How natural it is to talk.
Let's hear Eli last.
I should just say quickly that the project that is tentatively called Playing It is very hybrid-y. It's super cross-genre, and there's a lot of, it's very collage-y. So it's hard to excerpt like a poem to read in 2 minutes, so I'm going to just read a couple of excerpts. And just know that so far in the sort of trajectory, there's been an LSD trip and a trans kid who has dissociative fainting spells whenever there's reproductive anatomy involved in their experience. So sometime near puberty, I begin to experience episodes of sleep paralysis. In some cases, people feel that someone is in the room with them. Some experience the feeling that someone or something is sitting on their chest. They feel impending death and suffocation. In folkloric accounts, people believed a demon, ghost, the old hag, also known as a nightmare, sat on the victim's ribs. When I report my experiences to my best friend, she tells me, "It's the devil sitting on your chest. It's a sign from God. You need to change your sinful ways." What sinful ways? No one but you and God know. Oh. When personal accounts of nightmare attacks are not widely shared, enormous relief comes with the realization that others recognize one's experience. The next time I experience SP, I hear a hissing sound that seems to whisper, whistle, whir, Satan, Satan, a snake slithers in and out of my body. The sound presses, shh, shh. But I can't move out from under the weight of my own body that stays asleep, stuffed with gauze. I can't even move my mouth to scream for help. Hysteria, once thought to be a mental illness particular to women, derives from the Greek hystera, which translates as uterus. Plato describes the womb as an animal, a living creature desiring union, which, if it remains unfruitful beyond its proper season, travels around the body, blocking passages, obstructing breathing, and causing diseases. Aradius describes the womb as like some animal inside an animal, like a living thing inside another living thing. Thanks.
It was wonderful to hear from these really cool projects. Actually, would you hand me that guideline back, Stephen? Thank you so much. I wanted to begin the sort of discussion part of this by talking with the publishers now, and maybe it's a conversation that involves the writer as well. I'd be really curious to hear about like sort of the history of your collaboration, like from the beginning of when you got involved. Like, let's start on this side, and we'll kind of like go back and forth like this. Would you talk a little bit about Eli's work and putting it together? How did you find him, and how did the whole project go?
Sure. So we run a prize every year in Rainbow called the Rainbow Poetry Prize, and a few years ago, the founder of the press, Cosimone, and I, the publisher, decided that we would no longer outsource the selection of the book to a famous person, but that we really wanted the prize to reflect the diversity and range of what Nightbook was doing. So for the last few years, we've been picking several manuscripts that represent Nightbook's vision. And one of there's two nice things about a prize that I always say is prizes are so derided. One, it gives us as a small press a very focused window to do a lot of labor, which is maybe we read a lot of manuscripts when we make a selection, we make our selections. Secondly, it allows us to be kind of protected. There's a veil over the editorial process that means that people who are friends, the poetry is a very small community. I know a lot of people that submit books, you know each other. So our announcement, which is a de facto rejection to many people, is actually a celebratory statement that we're so excited to be taking these projects. So it's more like an open reading period with a small fee. And Eli's book came in, and I had seen Eli's chapbook called Unbeards had come out at the Seattle AWB, and I heard some of the work read, and then seeing it on the page, it was just, we were blown away by it. Cosmo and I really wanted to publish the book, and so that was how it came. So often, the sort of hearing the work in the world, being an editor, is being out there, absorbing, listening, paying attention, reading in journals, however it is. But you know, I think Duncan was right when he said that poetry was music and magic, because the music is an important part of how we select works. So we got this grant for two books, and this is this book is still about a year out, so we've kind of been in a pre-flight plan. And the biggest thing right now on the table is the title. Because until we have the title, we can't catalog the book. So we just met over the winter and decided that we would catalog it for spring of 2018, like a February book, so that Eli has a little more time to think and to talk with Cosmo and me about what the title will be. Because Plain Dead is evocative, but also, as we discovered during an Amazon search, pretty common. So that's kind of where we are now, and then there have been sort of meetings in New York to talk about stuff, and I've reviewed some of what we do as part of the pre-pub process, which for poetry is always so like counterintuitive, because you think the book, it's beautiful, it's an object, it's the work, it's out. But getting our minds around the pre-pub process and how it might help us with publication and exposure and things like advanced readings, or what can a galley, we can talk about this, but what can a galley do for a poetry book, which is a really good question, I think, and one that I still struggle to answer with, having been in publishing for a long time. So I think I'll stop there.
Yeah.
Any other comments?
Yeah, I think just one thing that's been exciting about this process is just that Stephen approached me about the Face Up program and was, I mean, I think there's money and we can do things with your book and, you know, and it'll help to promote it and I, you know, and so this is very much a learning process. But yeah, already we've been talking a lot about, you know, the, I guess the usual things, blurbing, cover art, and a better title. And so still very much in the beginning stages.
Great, thanks. So I primarily, almost entirely publish work that I solicit directly. Guillotine is just me, and I don't really have the capacity to read and go through a lot of submissions, which is hopefully going to change. So I knew Lyric previously, and I knew her. She has her first chapbook is out with Ugly Duckling Press, and I loved it. It's really brilliant. And I went to a reading that she did, and she read what was basically an early draft of this manuscript, and I was like, I want it. Good, that's mine. And she was really nice about it. She was like, okay. And so the press basically, it doesn't lose money. The chapbooks all pay for themselves eventually, the production costs. But I'm just starting to think about doing fundraising that's bigger than that, that will sort of build capacity to do bigger projects. So that was when I applied for the Face Out grant, I had this full manuscript, and then I have another author who's working on the project that's going to come out next year. That's the second half of the grant, but that's, yeah, so that's how we came to Face Out and
great,
each
yeah.
other.
Do you have anything to add to comment on the process of coming together?
Oh, well, maybe by the time I had given it to Sarah, and part of that is because I'm also an MFA candidate, and I'm at Pratt in their creative writing and activism program, and so I had already been working on it for quite a while with a lot of support in that area. So yeah, that's part of it.
Great. Yeah. Helen, go ahead.
For the Song Cave, we try to have an open reading period every year, usually at the end of the year, and it just depends on what resources we have, how many books we can accept, and we usually get hundreds of submissions, and a lot of them are books that we would accept if we were near a press. Thanks, though, to Face Out, we were not only able to accept Emily's book from the open reading period, which was by far one of the standout books that we received, and we kind of knew it. I don't know if she knows this, but we kind of knew it immediately that it was something that we wanted to do. And because of this grant, we were able to get the rights to use a cover image that Emily wanted to use. She'll mention something about that. And to take an ad out in a magazine, which is something if you're a small press, you just don't have an advertising budget for, or at least we didn't. So we took an ad out in Bomb Magazine, and in the literary supplement of that issue, Emily had some poems, so those kind of tied into each other. And she's reading for us tomorrow night here. And even though the book doesn't come out until the fall, we've already started to get people aware of it, and we hope that you all check it out.
I remember coming to AWP last year and like rushing to submit my manuscript to you guys. I had kind of just put it together and recently, and I remember being like, I know they're not going to take my book, I'm just going to send it anyway, it's a good experience. And then, but really all along I was like, Song Cave would be the main place that I would want to put this book out with. And I had done a lot of work on it in school and had lots of support on it, but it hadn't really come together yet. And so I think your deadline was a very motivating factor in this book, becoming a book. I had some covered image in mind. We can talk about that later, but it's really wonderful to be able to like chase down this archive to find this photograph that I really wanted.
Thanks, guys. That was a great sort of introduction, and it's interesting to hear how it differs among the different pairs here. We have more actually grantees in Face Out than are just the folks appearing here, and each press actually has two authors, not just the person here, but one other. But of course, we shrink it down for the purposes of the panel, but this is hopefully helping like lots of folks get this stuff out. And I thought, anyone could jump in at this point. We don't have to only go up and down, but this is a lot of this is about like heightening the relationship between writers and publishers. And so it would be interesting to hear you guys talk a little bit about how you work together or how your relationship is sort of intertwined with the process of getting the book a bigger audience, getting it out there. A lot of people in here have been, saying like it's not out yet, and we're already doing some stuff to get people to know about it. But for the purposes of this panel, let's talk about marketing. Like, what are you guys doing to market these books? You guys could go ahead since you're.
Oh.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I mentioned the ad and poem, and then also we do a reading every year at Bryant Park, and Emily will read for us. The next reading, and the book will be ready by then. And we try to just figure out also, like, if you're thinking about your own book, it's like, who is already in your life who would want to read this book or who would be excited about it? And those people, through social media now, can actually get the word out a lot better than a review would even, just by taking a picture of your book. And so when we made the announcement, we kind of got to see that, like, once we made the announcement that, like, tons of people who know and love Emily responded immediately. They were like, I can't wait for this. So it's on your radar. And yeah, I think the thing about the cover image is that we like to please our authors. You know, we want you to be really excited about the book that we've made. And when Emily suggested this cover image, we knew that it would be, you know, a little costly because it's a well-known artist. And so we were able, I think this was like the most we've ever been able to spend on the cover image. And the cover is really striking. And so I feel very like grateful that we were.
Yeah, I'm super grateful. I saw this image and I said, that and only that. Oh, okay, so he was an assemblage photographer who is a protege of Salvador Dali. His name is Stephen Arnold. He did these amazing assemblage photos in the Bay Area. And this one is called Gestation. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of like female anatomy in this book. And it's this kind of woman who's kind of like spread eagle with these beautiful like patterns of shells all around her. It's very striking. And so I sent it to them and thinking, I don't know, will they like it? And you guys were so supportive. And we just had to track down the archive, which took a lot of it took a lot. But I finally found a public, they're making a documentary about the artist, and I found a publicist for the documentary, and she kind of looped everything in. But it was so great that because of this grant, I could kind of make my, I'm a very like visual person, and I like things to be like fancy and beautiful, and so just having this image that is like a little over the top and so fully embodied, it was really a big deal for me, and I'm so grateful for it. And also, Songcave does an amazing, I'm just talking about what you've been doing with the book, you also do really good subscription like drives, so like people, they send out like, you know, the catalog of the year, people can like subscribe to the press, and then you get all the books in the mail later, and so I think that that's a really great way to get people to have a book on their radar.
What about you?
Well, small press publishing is awfully, awfully different. Obviously, very different from large press publishing. I think we're all sort of aware of the fact that we're not going to make any money, and so the publicity is more about getting the work to people who are going to be most excited about it, and making that as many people as possible. And so I think while we don't have the budget and the capacity of larger publishers. I find that like sort of a mutual aid approach to publicity works really well, where just building relationships with other people who are doing the same kind of work and seeking them out and supporting their work and saying, hey, you know, you're obviously really into this and this, I think you're gonna really like this. And so I use social media a lot to do that, and a lot on Twitter, and then just building relationships with other small presses and other people who are doing the kinds of work that I find really beautiful and interesting, and kind of reaching out to them. And most people are like really excited if you just email them and you're like, you're really awesome, you know, like, I really
yeah.
like this. And then, and that comes from an honest place, but it's also advantageous in that then those people are more likely to be interested in supporting the work that you're putting out. So.
Cool. Yeah, what about you guys?
Yeah, we are. A lot of what was said is really important, that the authors feel really invested in their book looks. And like the Song Cave, we spend a lot of time, and I spend a lot of time on physical realization of the book. And our books are all different because they have different trim sizes, they have different physical looks, they have different whatever the needs we'd like to really do. It's really important to us. The other Face Out book is by Rosamund King, and it's just out here, so we've been focusing on that, and it was it has a square trim, you know, an expensive trim, and it has performance photography from a piece she did in India, and Rosamund is a really different writer than Eli, and that she's traveling the world, she's a global presence, she goes to Africa and Caliban, and so that sort of, I think making the marketing and publicity plan fit the author is really important. I'm an author who uses no social media. Well, then we have to think outside the box here. Like, maybe we do more galleys, maybe we mail more hard copies, maybe we, you know, send notes, you know, the old-fashioned way, emails. I'm an author who has an amazing, you know, 15,000 followers on Twitter, you know, and a Facebook phenomenon. Then social media is this great tool to spread the word, to get interest way ahead of publication once the book is out. And it's a matrix of stuff. Like, we're mission-driven, all of us, in some level. We do this work because the poems are important. We believe in the books. And I take a very long view of marketing and publicity. And I always tell an author, I say, give it 2 years before you even think about what that means. It is new. It is a new book for 2 years. So that they don't begin to worry or feel depressed or feel ignored. And also, I think another big thing in poetry marketing is the ask and the invitation. That we are a community where people, we're a gift economy. A lot of these things are like, you buy them for the cost or less. It's not about the profit, it's about the exchange. And to have an author think about the exchange they're making with the community and how that publisher is part of that is a really valuable tool. And something that I think we've been talking, Eli and I've been talking about, is how this is the second book. It's very different from the first book. And Eli has a lot, you know, I'm speaking for you, can shut me up. But Eli wants to position this book differently, also with the poetry. So I think it's like, how do you honor everything going on, both like the aesthetic issues, you know, we've also been talking about the trans subject matter as being something that's, you know, there's a lot of interest right now in how to handle that and how to position a book in a way that's respectful of the rigor and the art, while also sort of engaging with a topic that's, you know, really part of the cultural exchange right now.
Just to say a little bit more about that, Peter Covino of Barrett Streets here, who published my first book, Boy with Flowers, and it seemed like that book, because of the trans subject matter, was taught a lot in university courses, like gender studies courses, which was, I think, something that I naively hadn't even thought about. So, you know, for this time around with this book, that's something that's on my radar. And so, yeah, just in terms of who to send those, you know, galley copies to and whatnot, that might look different than just sending, you know, to journals for reviews and things like that.
Yeah, that's actually a good sort of lean into the next question I was going to ask, which was related to, like, if you've published a book before for the writers, maybe how it was different, or just maybe talking about your sort of publishing history leading up to this. So you were just talking about your previous book, Eli, and I thought I'd ask Lyric about, Sarah said you had a chapbook with Ugly Duckling Press as well. It would be interesting to hear you talk about that, just a little bit about what it was like putting that one together and then doing this one. Yeah.
That book came out in 2014, and at the time I was living in another country. I was living in France, and I don't really recall what Ugly Duckling Press did to publicize that book. I did a reading there. I did a reading when I came back, and. The way that I think about it on my own terms is, for me, it's very much about my community of writers among the writers and editors at Ugly Duckling, as well as the people I go to school with now, and so there. For me, when it comes to publishing, I guess I'm very focused on the ways that our communities exchange and interchange with one another and meet and converge and split
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. And Emily, I don't remember if you said if you've published any other books before this one.
I've had a couple of books, one with a press called Poor Claudia, based out of Portland, Oregon, and one with a press. It's like they collaborate. No Dear Magazine and Small Anchor Press published my chapbook about Carl Linnaeus a few years back. But those were all print runs of like 100. So this is my first book, and it's been a very different process.
Yeah. Actually, that would be something we could ask Sarah a little bit about, which is, you know, the differences between like marketing a chapbook and marketing a book. I mean, you know, like I said at the beginning, it's really important to us to, you know, give chapbooks a voice as well as full-length collections. So, you know, you said a little bit about connecting with people and just saying, hey, you know, we're all in this community together. But, you know, it would be interesting if you could maybe talk a little more about, like, imagining what it's like to put together and market a chapbook specifically.
Sure. Well, when I'm putting out a chapbook, I don't always necessarily think about this. I think of the press as sort of a continuing project that's like an umbrella for a lot of really incredible different writers. And so in some ways, when I'm promoting the press, what I'm looking at is promoting my own taste and the word curated is so overused right now, but basically my aesthetic. And I work with probably about half and half writers who are fairly well known and who have like very significant social media presences or significant followings, and that helps circulate word about the press. And then if people are really excited about that chapbook, they're more likely to keep looking out for other things that I publish by people that they may not have heard of. So I have a pretty solid mailing list right now, which is in those folks tend to really buy. There are a lot of people who just buy everything that I put out, which is really great, even though they may not have heard of the person. But they're all good, so
yeah.
that's my publicity strategy, is just publish really good people.
Awesome. I had a couple of slow follow-ups for the conversation. Emily, you said Alan does like a subscription thing. Would you talk a little bit about that in more detail?
Yeah, in December we usually send out an announcement of all the books that are coming out the next year, and we have a loyal base of subscribers, and so they get excited about it, they subscribe, and it makes it possible also for us to have enough to print the books, because they end up paying the full subscription price, and it's always much needed funds, and so libraries end up getting that subscription as well, which is a great way that like we send out the books to the subscribers first, and so if the book is ready before the pub date, the library will have it, and there, you know, libraries we've never been to our collections that we didn't know about that somehow heard about us, and they've stayed loyal each year. And we did, when we first started, we were doing chapbooks, and we did a chapbook subscription. But I assume no one here is, like, into this for the money, you know, because there is none. And, like, and it is, like Stephen was saying, it's a different exchange economy. You know, like, it's one that doesn't have to deal with strictly capital. It can deal with respect. And so when we first started making chapbooks, we sold them at cost. We never made anything. We probably lost money because we didn't realize how much postage was. And so it really is about getting the work into people's hands, getting exposure for the writer, and that's what we care about more than, you know, whether or not it says. I mean, we just don't even think in terms of bestsellers.
Yeah.
You know, we think in terms of like, what would, like, this is, your time is valuable, like, this is what we're spending our time doing, because we care about it, and so that's kind of, I also feel like the more that you do care about it, that is its own marketing plan, you know, like, if you don't like the book that you're publishing, I can't imagine selling it, you know, like, so I think that that's one of the ways that we've gone about things, is we have to really love something in order to put, like, you know, this is what we're doing with our lives. Like, in order to put our life, you know, in front of it.
Absolutely, and it seems from what you all are saying that that goes for the author as well. Like, you want them to love their book too. Like, with getting the image for you, like, that makes a big difference probably in the way you'll put your book out because you love it so much and, you know, he supported to make it be what you wanted it to be. So, and then Stephen, you were going to talk about galleys, I think. Yeah.
Oh, sure. I was going to say something snarky, but I'm not going to. But yeah, I think I would just say that if you're looking for publishing, look at what the books are looking like. There's an amazing book fair here, and you can really see walking around who's really making beautiful books and who's doing the work of making physical objects that are things that you want to have for a long time. So yeah, galleys. So I started in book publishing. I worked for Simon & Schuster for a very short window a long time ago. And there's a part of how traditional book publishing works is it's about knowledge and access to what's coming out. And the galley is this really important way of making something known before it's really part of it. So a lot of people in poetry look at a galley and go, why would I want this when it's going to be a beautiful book? Why would I care to see, you know, a photocopy roughed up thing? So there's this kind of divide between poetry publishing and the rest of the world. And the rest of the world, everything major happens in the media off a galley. Like, you get it 4 months out, I'm a reviewer, I pitch it to my editor two months out, I turn my review in 2 weeks before, about 3 weeks before publication, and then it appears in the New York Times book review, say I'm using New York Times. And we had a book once that was reviewed in the book review, and then book review asked us what the pub date was. And it was this weird situation where we had not assigned it one yet, Amazon had, and I was like, well, that's just Amazon. Do you think Amazon is right about everything? And I was like, it's this, you know, and I pushed it back 2 months on the spot. And they're like, oh, great, okay, thanks. And then they reviewed it. And I think we're always trying to figure out how we can craft the, maybe not everyone, but for us, what is the role of really doing the pre-pub? It's expensive to make galleys, the mailings are expensive. What's the best use of your resources? Can I get this galley to someone who may actually be able to pitch it to a publication where the schedule is really important? And there are places, there are magazines, like Bomb, for example, Alan mentioned, they care about when things are coming out, if they're going to do something. Places like Book Forum, which rarely cover poetry, but when they do, they want to have the review in print before the book is actually on the shelves. So the question of how do you really make it worth it? And I'm still trying to figure out, sometimes you don't do galleys and you get a ton of reviews, and other times you do it and it leads to things. So it's more like, how do we figure out how the pre-pub part of it is most effective? You can send PDFs around, you can do that, but there's something about the physical thing showing up that makes people notice if it's on a place that gets 15,000 articles a day. And a lot of people want to read, they don't want to read on the computer. They want to read books even in a book.
Absolutely, yeah, thank you. So I want to have time to speak with the audience members and just, have a discussion in here as well. So I thought I would sort of ask you guys one more general question, and then we'll see, if anyone has anything to say in here before we get out. But I did want to ask you just broadly about editing and the editorial back and forth of putting these books together. And of course, maybe we could start with the writers and then turn it to the publishers, since publishers just spoke a bit. Just about working together on sort of an editorial framework on these projects. I'm happy for anyone to jump in to start to reflect on editing together. Does anyone want to go? Let's ask Emily.
I'm still editing the book kind of on my own right now, and then I'm going to share it, and then we haven't gotten to that part of the process yet.
Great, yeah.
So we're still kind of there.
Yeah, we're still a little time out. And Emily asked us if she could have some extra time, which we're all for. But when we do edit, I run the press with Ben Estes, who's at the table in the book fair right now. And we each read the manuscript and send our own notes. So we don't compile joint same sensibility, you end up getting two sets of notes that his are usually more like a macro view of the manuscript where you can see what's going on with it, and mine is very much closer to line editing. And so we end up, you know, making a good pairing.
I'm so excited to get this document.
Oh yeah. Soon it's gonna happen. What about you, Lyric? Talk about editing with Sarah a little bit, if you would.
I remember Sarah giving me notes. They were more along the lines of a sort of broader, I think, kind of like going sort of chapter by chapter, talking, you know, sort of bringing up things that.
I can leave the room if you
want. She's like, la, la, la.
She was a monster.
I should have done my homework. I should have had a cup of coffee before I started. It was really great because I had support in school while working on the manuscript. I had support from Sarah while we were working together on it, really, like, working on making it say what it needed to say. And then that was it. It really didn't need that much. I remember a particular note from you that said that there wasn't really much about it that needed to be changed. It very much is a team effort in my view.
Still very much in progress for me in terms of getting feedback. I guess one thing that for me, this project is so different from my first book. It is very, you know, whatever experimental means, but for me, it feels very different. And so I think a lot of the sort of standards of value that I had received through, you know, various academic programs or just whatever's considered to be cool or whatever. A lot of that for me has been unclear. And so I think part of this editing process for me, and even submitting to Nightbo in the first place, was like, I like so many of their books and the work of the authors that Nightbo publishes. So, but I'm also, I think in a way that with my other book or previously, I'm actually very eager to hear from both Cosm and Stephen feedback, and those conversations have only really just started. I think maybe the last time Stephen and I spoke, you had mentioned that Cosm likes to get in there and do the kind of line by line work, and whereas you more of the kind of overall bigger picture editor.
Yeah, I would just say one thing about editing. There's three of us at Nightbo that edit, and some of us, I mean, Lindsay Ball, our managing editor, could mind edit the hell out of anything. And we had a book that was especially, it was a prose book that needed a lot of work, and it was just, I had such respect for the line editors in the room. and then sometimes I can just see something really is missing a section or a piece, or the order is off, and I feel pretty confident with that. And Cosm, I think, is especially good in the line, as you were saying, poems. But sometimes we get books that are just done. Like, it's just like, I mean, copy editing and proofing, but it's just like, the thing is like, it's just like, it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great, but you can, again, it's just like, each manuscript is sent to you in a different state with a different process. And we're sort of there to figure it all out together.
And going off something that you guys said, I had been, you know, loving my, you know, favorite book from last year was a song you book, and I had this inherent trust of what you were doing, and that you would be good to my work because I loved your books and the authors that you were putting out. So it's like I felt like I was, like my work was really
as an editor, my job is to work with a writer on telling the story that they want to tell and not the story that I want their book to be. And I do want to say really quickly that I think the gift economy thing is very beautiful, and none of us make money, as we keep saying. But I think it is also really important to acknowledge that we all deserve to get paid money for the work that we do, because we live in a system where we need money to survive. And there are certain, I think the assumption or the pre-assumption and the fact that it is a gift economy also creates these sort of invisible barriers to entry for people who don't have access to to the startup capital, to start a press, or who don't have the time to run a press out of their houses. And I think it's not, it's not a coincidence that big publishing and small publishing is very, very white. So I think it's also really important to acknowledge that I wish we could pay people more, and I'm always looking for ways to do that. If anyone in the room has a really wealthy, guilty Republican family, I know a lot of really awesome authors who deserve to be making a lot of money.
We're accepting donations at this point. Yeah. Thank you for saying that, though. But let's see, I'd love to, if anyone wants to, join the conversation and has questions about any of this, we have, we can talk about Face Out itself a little bit if people are curious about grants and the program. These folks actually know more about it than I do, since I joined CLMP in January, and this version of the program predates my presence at CLMP. So they're the best people to talk to, and you could ask questions about that right now, or any of the things we've talked about, editing, collaborating to market, or anything else, small press, or anything I did not bring up. So does anyone have anything they'd like to ask our panelists today before we get out of here? Yeah, go ahead.
What do you find is the best place to send galleys? Do you use galleys, or is it more of a book by book?
I'll repeat the question for the recorder. Where is the best place to send galleys is the question. So, yeah.
I mean, that was part of my larger question. I mean, certainly pre-publications, and then anyone you think that could break the book out or through. I mean, but that was, I wasn't being rhetorical when I asked, or I said that we were sort of in the process of trying to figure out how to make them worth our, they're expensive. I mean, you do a short, we print 25 copies of the galley, it's like $6.67 a book. It's much cheaper to send. And some presses actually do their full run and then hold it and put stickers onto their finished books and turn them into galleys and hold their stock in their warehouse or in their garage until the galleys are sort of circulated. So you can do it that way too. But certainly the pre-publications and any kind of, this is the problem, right? Any publication where you don't know anyone that works there, right? It's like, sure, I would love to get this under the door to Style Magazine, the T Magazine, and the Times, because the poet is cool, and I think it would be perfect for a photo shoot, or whatever it is. And you don't know a name there, or Condé Nast. It's like, the New Yorker is like this empire. Like, and you get one name, and then there's the breadcrumb trail, it disappears. There's this gatekeeping, this insane gatekeeping that goes on in the New York media and publishing world. No one knows anyone. No one knows. It's all, and so it's the power of exclusivity, which is why you want to try to get a leg up on publicity or try to break in or think about what can I be doing. You just don't, you're basically told you don't know the right people or you don't have the money to buy this list. And it frustrates me. And it frustrates me, and I find it so boring. Most of what I read about is so fucking boring. If someone had written about one of our books, or the Kenward Elmsley reprint that the Song Cave did, it would be so much more interesting. Or any of these fine poets were. I just think there's such a lack of dearth of rigor and a laziness, which is... Sorry, that's my...
Yeah, keep ranting, keep ranting.
capitalism. I don't really do like broad mailings just because I do a super limited print run, and again, it's expensive. And so if people contact me directly for review copies, or if I have a pre-existing relationship with someone that I know is actually going to read what I send them and will probably review it or talk about it. I also think a lot about who can I send it to that's going to talk about it a lot online, because I find that social media is in, I think somebody already said, is in many ways can be a lot more useful than a print review. So sending it to people who I know will be into it and who have big like presences or talk about stuff a lot, that's, I find that more effective than like mailing.
Great, yeah.
Yeah, we make a small number of advanced copies, and some places also will accept PDFs, and we tend to figure out, like, has this person written about the author before? Has the author published in this magazine? Like, we always, you know, write to the magazine and say, oh, we have this new book coming out from one of your former contributors. They may put it on social media. They often do. Alumni associations tend to be pretty great, you know, that they want to actually tell you about good things that they've done. But we end up sending it to the trade publications, you know, just regardless of which book it is, Publishers Weekly, Library Journal. And then the difficulty, like Stephen was saying, is that you really do have to either, like, figure out a way to break that gate, you know, like, to get in that gate, like, with a press release that's amazing. But, like, what you also have to keep in mind is that these people are getting, like, thousands of press releases every day. And so it's like, these people, it's like, we have no idea who these people are. you know, it's like, they're the shadow. Yeah, so it's hard to know, but if you do have someone who's in your corner or who's interested in your writing, and you get the book to them, you know, they're more likely to try to get something out there. And then there are certain people, like, who if you're really reading, you know, really reading the reviews, and they reviewed something that's like your book, you know, like, they're a good person to send to as well. Possibly because of what Steve was saying is, like, most people are not thinking outside of the box. Like, they're reviewing the same kinds of things over and over and over again, and not really willing to take risks on genre or experimental writing. So,
yeah, I like to tell the story of Allison Cobb, who had wrote a wonderful book called Greenwood that a very small press published, and she knew Dominique Browning, and Dominique Browning reviewed her book in the Guardian section of the New York Times.
Wow.
This is the only way she could get it in there. And I'll also just say, there's a thing that I want to, like, I'm an author, we're all authors too. Like, you have to participate in helping the press, and you have to push yourself. It's like running a marathon. It might be the hardest thing you ever do, is filling out that author questionnaire or gathering every contact you know, doing the work of reading the reviews so you know whose reviews you like, doing the work of looking, really scouring, so the people at your press can really help you and be behind you, and, you know, you're giving them the win, helping them give the win to fill those sales. And that I have authors that crumble down in tears when they send me back this pathetic thing, and they're like, I can't do this, I won't do this, I don't know how. I'm like, I'm sorry, your book is on hold until you tie yourself to your desk. I don't care, you never write another poem, you have to do it. We cannot, I can't, you must. And it's far harder than writing a book, it's far harder than anything they've maybe ever done related to their career as poets, but it is really important. And as the world shrinks, and as the relationship between poetry and these general medias grow wider, it's all about networks, rather. Social networks, coteries at AWP, academic circles, friendships, and it's only more important as time goes on.
Thank you. Was that helpful? Yeah. I know, that was like an amazing answer because everybody talked pretty much. I feel like I saw a second hand though when you raised yours. Did you have a question? Yeah.
Yeah, I just had a question for the writers. And my question is, when you're working your manuscript and you're at that point where you're trying to like send it into places, okay, prepare to publish it, do you know when that point is where you just feel like this is done, it's ready, like, or are you constantly, is it always just unsettling feeling of trying to decide whether you should send it in somewhere or whether you feel like it's done, and you know, like, are you ready to send your kid off to college? And, you know,
Yeah, let me repeat that. He was just asking, when do you know, how done is your manuscript by the time you start sending it in for potentially being published? Yeah, go ahead.
I think that I, even right now, I'm just glad that that's not coming out for a year, because I still feel like there's time to work on it, even though I wouldn't have submitted it in the first place, especially to my book, I just revere in this particular way, if I hadn't gotten feedback that was positive from trusted friends. For me, especially with something like this that I, like I said, maybe with my other book that felt more like a familiar kind of style, like a, I think I had enough models of like, this is what a good book of lyric poems looks like, you know, in this kind of, as Stephen has pointed out, this sort of very familiar and maybe boring or kind of tired, you know. And so with this, I think I have a lot less confidence, but at the same time, the commitment to the project is intense, and the belief in it. And so I think, but it's always helpful for me to have, you know, again, trusted friends who are poets, whose work I also respect and love, and who I trust to tell me, you know, yes or no, not yet, you know, which is hard to hear, but yeah, people who kind of keep it real in that way.
I feel like we're having readers that you trust to stop for it, whether they're friends or teachers. I'm like, what do you think? For me, it's like when I can't look at it anymore. But it was this like kind of leap of faith moment. And I remember when you called me to be like, I want to publish your book. I was like, are you sure? And then I was like, but it's not done yet. And so there was, I didn't feel like it was done. So, and I think that there's lots of varying advice, and like you should never submit a manuscript unless you feel like it's absolutely done. But I think the idea of something being absolutely done and finished and perfectly in place is kind of weird and not helpful anyway. So I think it's if you feel good about it. It's like you feel good about it or you don't.
This book is it's a memoir and it's poetry, so it's two things at once, and it's about healing from an abusive childhood. At the same time as trying to understand that in a body that has been fragmented by that trauma, so fragmented and made foreign. Two things helped me realize that I was really close to being done, if not completely finished. And the first thing was that I had been having nightmares about my mother. And then I wrote her a letter, and the letter isn't there. It's sort of a letter, it's not really a letter, and I didn't send it to her. It's just that, like, I wrote it. I responded to my nightmares, and I wrote it. And then after that, I felt a lot better about it, and my nightmares stopped, and that was really cool. And then I sent a copy to my dad, and then none of my family had ever read it before. And I was afraid of what my dad and his family would think about it, because they don't know anything about what happened to me. And
prompted, and that was when I knew I was finished. So it's very much a thing of the heart, I think, which is very serious. The heart is a very serious thing.
Thank you. I think that's a great comment to respond to that question. It's like it's hard to know, but you just have to feel it out. It seems like, yeah. Was there any, we still have a few more minutes, just a few, but could I take another question for the panelists before we go? Yeah.
Can you all talk about, how you think your presses will be 5 years from now? Do you have a plan for yourselves? Do you have a vision? I mean, do you see yourselves carrying on in the same ways? Do you want to be in a different place 5 years? I guess, roll the tape forward, and what would be some of your 5-year goals or a 10-year goal? Do 2 years and do something else? I'm just really curious about what people's process is.
Great, yeah, so the question is, what is the future?
My plan is to get very wealthy independently in the next few years. But no, I still want to be doing this, and I would really like, I'm starting to look into fundraising to do full-length books, because that's where I would really like to go next. And like I said, I'm looking at figuring out a model that allows the books to pay for themselves, and also in some way does a better job of sharing, if they make money, of sharing that with the authors, or just finding a more successful model to pay the writers who are doing this amazing work. It's always money. But I'm still going to be doing this, hopefully, if the country's still here.
First, I want to say that was really beautiful. That was a really beautiful explanation. And I think we're all in it for the long haul. You know, like I am doing with my life what I wanted to be doing, and so I don't see it as like there's some next step that I need to achieve. Like I actually like making books and trying to get them into people's hands, and so I kind of think it's doing what we're already doing. This year we're actually doing more books than we've ever done before. I think we're doing 6 books and like 10 to 15 chapbooks. And we also make art prints that help support the books. And I think the 5-year to 10-year plan would be, if not becoming independently wealthy, then finding someone who's independently wealthy or like granting organizations that want to have a relationship with you so that you can continually ask them, each year we continue your support. And so it would be great if we were able to find, 5 people who like what we do and have expendable income that they would. We also function as a nonprofit through fiscal sponsorship with Fractured Atlas. And so when people do donate to us, it's tax deductible for them. And I think that's really the content is there. Like we know what we want when we see it. But the financial aspects, that's the only thing that we need to figure out in the long term.
Yeah, financial. No, I mean, I think any press has a kind of a lifeline and a timeline, and you wake up every so often and you realize you're going into the next chapter of what you're doing. And then we have a managing editor, she's been with us for 2 years, and I just really recently realized, okay, no, we're still doing more, we still want to do more, we still want more infrastructure, and I want a marketing and publicity person, and X and Y, so we're hungry to have a sustainable model, and to have a staff, more of a paid staff than we have now, and a locus, a beehive that can be a place for poetry and for literature. And and if there's one thing Trump has really done, is like, I'm gonna die doing this. Like, I may have, who knows if there'll be a war, but this is, as Alan said, I really agree. This is the work I must be doing.
Yeah, I don't think any of us are in danger of waking up tomorrow being like, oh my God, nobody's writing good things anymore. You know, there's always, it's like such a joy to be able to do this. There's so many really brilliant people who are doing such beautiful work, and it's a really big honor and privilege. I don't know. You would have to have something wrong with you if you get tired of it.
I think that's definitely true. So it's about 2:45, which is when this panel ends. But final thing, if you would say, are all of you in at tables in the book fair? Can we go buy your books? Just say your table number, just so the folks in here know, so we can find you.
We're at booth 458.
458. Yes, going once, going twice. Sarah.
This is my booth.
Her booth is with her. It is a portable one, please. And it's in that bag is Larry's chapbook inside. Excellent.
Yes.
We would love for you to talk to Sarah about getting a copy. And then, do you have a booth number?
Yeah, we're, I think 628T, so in the 600 row, we're at the end of one of the rows.
Yeah, please buy their books. Please support these people. This has absolutely been a wonderful, you know, it's a learning experience for me too. And, you know, if you want to talk to them more, they're here. Now you know who they are. Yeah, thanks. Let's give a round of applause. Those are all left. Thank you.